What's up? What's up? Thank you for coming.
I appreciate you for having me on your show.
No problem. No problem. So take this little bit of time. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the people and let them know what you breed and keep.
All right. My name is Jermaine Guy, and I go by Shovel Nose Hogs. And I'm a specialist in the Plains hog noses as well as Eastern hog noses. So I have a YouTube channel. I produce content, probably 2 to 3 videos every week. I'm on all social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook. And I'm just glad that I'm able to talk about hognose snakes. I do it all day, answering emails. I watch a lot of YouTube videos. Basically, man, I just love the reptile community.
Oh, nice, nice. So you said you on all social medias. Are you on TikTok as well?
Yeah, I'm on TikTok. I don't post that much on there, but yeah, I'm on TikTok as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what to post on TikTok. I want it to be different than the YouTube stuff and different from the Instagram stuff. But it's hard to figure out. And I most of the time waste time watching TikTok, to be honest with you.
That's same here.
It's addictive. It's very addictive. Well, thank you for coming on. As you guys, as he said, his links are stuff in the description down below. Make sure you go subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow the Instagram, Facebook, and the TikTok. Check out the Hognose. He has some amazing animals. He's been. How long you been doing Hognose again?
Oh, for 2 years.
2 years. Okay.
February 2020.
Okay. Nice. Nice.
That's when I got my first hog nose.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, make sure you go follow all his social medias. Links are in the description down below. Definitely check him out. But we brought him on to get a little more about him. So we're going to go ahead and dive into some questions. I always forget where I put them. So here's the first question. How long have you been on YouTube, or have you had your YouTube?
All right. So I started my YouTube channel April 2020. So a little bit after I got my first hognose snake. So,
okay.
Yeah. So the reason why I started my YouTube channel is because once I realized that I wanted to start breeding hognose snakes, I started to like research everything I could about them. And I've been watching like, I love watching YouTube videos. I like watching more than I like producing content.
Understandable.
Watching people like Brian Burchek, Snake Discovery. I used to watch like a lot of ball python videos, and a lot of the big breeders have YouTube channels. So if you ever want to see like what a new morph looks like, or you want more information, all you have to do is jump on YouTube. So mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be the same thing with hognose snakes. So I'm jumping on YouTube trying to research what the sable morph looks like, what the Arctic morph, and like nobody was making YouTube videos on hognose snakes.
Oh,
so I had to rely on going on Morph Market and Facebook. And I was like, you know what? Once I really start getting into this stuff, I'm going to start making YouTube videos. And then I started like DMing breeders, and I'm like, why don't you have a YouTube channel? You have all these cool hognose snakes. You post all these pictures. Why don't you put them on YouTube? And they're like,
yeah,
oh, I'm eventually get to it. But after a while, I was like, you know what? If y'all not gonna do it, I'm gonna do it. And so I was mm-hmm. like, one, it's gonna separate me from everybody, because I'll be the only one really doing it on a consistent level. It'll get my mm-hmm. name out there. People can see my personality. And then once I start breeding, people are more likely to buy from me because they kind of know what I'm doing. They kind of see what I'm doing. They follow my whole path to becoming a breeder. And I was like, you know what? I'm also going to post the good and the bad, just yep. bringing people along through the experience.
Yep. That's 100% why I started my channel. I mean, you had the lack of a market there, so that definitely helps. But also you did it so people could know what you're doing, to see what you're doing, and follow you through your experience of breeding. That way they felt more comfortable when they actually start buying stuff from you, because they've seen the work you put into it. They see you actually have these animals, and they felt comfortable going like, you know what? I'm going to send him $2,000 for this animal, because I know he put that time and work in it. He took care of that animal. People don't realize it's a big part of your branding. When you have a YouTube channel, you get to show a lot of you, your personality, and your animals. And it allows people to kind of go with you in that journey and trust you in that journey as well, because they see the good and the bad that happens with you, and they see how hard you work to get those animals, to produce those animals. And it does, it's, I try to get people to understand that aspect of it when I'm like, why don't you have a channel? Why don't you even, like, you don't have to be the best YouTuber. You can just put stuff out here and there, but it's just that process so people can see you. Like, it's a free platform for to allow people to see you. I don't understand why you're not using it to your benefit.
It's just a great platform to advertise, and advertising costs a lot of money. Like, if you ever pay to advertise on like Facebook or TikTok, like, you will run through your money, and you have this, like you say, a free platform to where you can post your animals, post your business, and people will learn to trust you. And one of my biggest fears was like, okay, I'm going to start breeding hognose snakes. I don't want to have a bunch of babies that I can't sell because people don't know who I am. And I'm just thinking, like, I always mention Emily from Snake Discovery. Like, she's starting to produce more expensive hognose morphs and stuff like that. But like, at the beginning, she was just like producing normals. And because she's so popular, she would have a wait list. Like, she don't have any issues selling her animals. Same with Brian Barczyk. And it's because people fall in love with their personality and they trust them. And I was like, that's kind of the route that I want to go down.
Yeah, it's very smart. It's setting up customers before you actually have products for those customers. But it's also building your brand as you're developing your brand. Like, it's marketing 101 technically. And I'm not even a marketing major. I don't know anything about marketing, but it's right there. And it's amazing. People, I always hear, oh, I'm gonna wait till I have some clutches. I'm gonna wait till I have more snakes, because I don't feel I have enough to show people. Show you starting. That's your channel. You starting is your channel. Celtic Reptiles, thanks for coming through. Appreciate you. Always encourage reptile folks to start YouTube. It always helps keep the community tight. That as well. It helps not only you when you actually have animals and people to get to know you, but it also helps grow the community and make it more mainstream. The more mainstream we make reptiles, the harder it would be for them to take away our reptiles.
Yeah, and I'm like big on YouTube. Like, I love watching YouTube. I don't have cable. That's YouTube is my cable. So
I did cut cable off. Yeah.
So I love watching videos of people like on hognoses. And so like when I first was getting started, like, I would literally just search hognose snake, Western hognose snake, and I would just watch everybody's videos that posted. And they did have a few channels where they actually showed them starting, and then like you fast track to like five years from then, and you can see how they built their collection. And I was like, that's pretty cool to see where they started. And I was like, you know what, I want to do something like that. So in the future, people can look back on when I started and see like all my, like, especially with like my females, the ones that I bought as babies, in 2 or 3 years, you can go back on in my YouTube catalog and see when I first got them. And just and also something that I can use to kind of go back to in memory lane to see how my snakes grow over the years. Because sometimes you don't even realize how much your snakes have grown until you go back and see pictures or videos of them when they were babies.
Yeah, I had, you know how your phone does that? Today, 8 years ago, this is a picture. And I seen a picture of a snake that I have now that's produced like two clutches for me. And I was like, oh my God, I remember when you hatched out. You were so small. And then to see my setups and the little area I did start out with and where I am now, it is nice. That's another reason for YouTube to document your stuff.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You'd be able to go back and look what you did and everything. What's up? Thanks for coming through. Satchmo Place, Tammy, thanks for coming through. No cable here. Understandable. I want to work with some down the road. Okay, yeah. Hey, I'm thinking about it too. I'm starting to learn about them a little more, getting excited about them. So we actually were talking a little bit before we went live, and I didn't know hognose didn't constrict. that they're a rear fang. So explain that to people that might not know that, which is me for one, but go ahead and explain how that works. Yeah.
So in the wild, like the plains hognose, especially the eastern, they're mostly amphibian eaters. So they eat a lot of frogs and toads and salamanders. So they use those two rear fangs in the back of their mouth to pop toads, because whenever they latch onto a toad, the toad will actually like expand their body. They'll suck in air to make themselves seem larger, and they'll use those fangs to pop them. And it does have some venom. It's mostly a saliva, not really a venom, kind of like garter snakes. Actually, their saliva, if you get bit by a garter snake, you can have an allergic reaction to it.
Okay.
And so they don't constrict. They basically just bite down on their prey and just chew that saliva into them. And like with the amphibians, it actually, I guess, paralyzes them. We were talking about I feed all my snakes frozen thawed mice, and I was saying I probably wouldn't feed like a live mice. Now, some babies you can feed like live pinkies, but in terms of like a live mouse, I think it's kind of inhumane, because that hognose snake is gonna eat that mouse alive, and then sometimes swallow it sideways. And I'm just like, man, I can't do that to a mouse. And then it's once they get to adult size, they're probably gonna be consistent eaters, especially the females. So it's not needed to feed live, especially when the animals are sub-adults or adults.
Oh wow. That is fascinating. Like the fact that we can learn so much from these animals, from the way they eat, the way they breed, how to take care of them. It's amazing to learn about the animals themselves. Even before you even learn to breed them, just learning how to take care of them is amazing. And I didn't know that's how they worked and that's how they ate. I know I was under the impression they were constrictors, just like ball pythons. But then again, you have venomous animals that do the same kind of thing, where they bite and just let the venom work, and then they slowly eat. But I forget that there are animals that just bite their prey and do eat it live.
Yeah.
I was like, oh God, that's crazy. And you're right, it is kind of inhumane to intentionally feed it live when you can feed it frozen thawed. Yeah. That is one of the things we've had going on in our community, where people are like, feeding videos and the way people do feeding videos, what is being responsible and be a responsible keeper and a responsible pet owner. And we're trying to keep these animals, and mainstream people see them, and this heightens the fear they have of our animals. So it doesn't help us with keeping our animals. So we have to be responsible of what feeding videos we do and make sure they're more educational instead of just shock value.
Yeah.
But then you still got to understand people are going to do what they want to do. They got to eat, but people are also going to do what they want to do. And people realize, oh, I can get views by doing this.
Yeah.
It's human nature to try to make money, unfortunately. So those are the downsides that we as a community have to talk about and try to protect. Letting everybody know, like, hey, maybe this is not the best light for us. What morph do you have? Oh, that's actually going to be the next question. So let's go ahead and hit the next question. And see, you guys are on top. You know how this works. So what is your favorite codom and your favorite recessive?
Okay, so I'll answer this question and then I'll go with what morphs that I have. So in terms of like the hognose snakes, there's only two codoms. So you have your anaconda gene and you have your arctic gene. So
okay,
anaconda gene, it influences the pattern of the snake. So it reduces, so one copy, the heterozygous version of the anaconda gene, it reduces the pattern compared to like the normal. And then the super form, the homozygous, it completely reduces the pattern outside of like the head. So the head will still have pattern, but the rest of the body will be patternless. And so
okay.
That's what's called the superconda or super anaconda. And then we have the arctic, which is a really cool, it's probably one of the best genes in hognose snakes, especially when you mix it with other recessives. The arctic it was founded by a guy named Jeff Gelwood. And what it does is, the one copy of it, the arctic, It basically reduces or lightens the background, and it kind of highlights the pattern or saddles of the hognose snake. So usually like the saddles will be outlined in black. And because of that contrast between like the really light background and then like the black around the saddles, it makes like the saddles pop. And then you have the super Arctic version, was probably one of the most unique genes out of any snake that I think of. These snakes actually hatch out almost pure black. They have jet black eyes. And when they have their second shed, now hognose, they actually shed right out of the egg. As soon as they hatch out the egg, a lot of times their eyes are blue and they shed out. That second shed, they go through the craziest transformation that you'll see. Go from almost a completely black snake to their background is almost like white. It's like a really, really light gray color. And then like their saddles are like really rich and black. Sometimes they're brown, and you see just like a huge contrast, and they have jet black obsidian eyes. If you want to pull one out, I actually have a super Arctic superconda. So both of the colors put together. Let me go get it for
you. Okay, yeah, that would be great. Oh, really? I didn't know that, Phil. See, I'm learning. See, that's why I like doing this. I am learning stuff as well. Pets, what's up? Thanks for coming through. I haven't seen you in a while. How you doing? So let's go ahead and put you on solo. How we do that? We push the buttons. There we go.
All right. So this right here, I hatched this guy out last year. One of my dream snakes. So you can see his jet black eyes. That's indicative of the super Arctic. I'm trying to get him in focus.
Yeah, it's hard when right is left and left is right.
Yeah. And you see he's almost completely patternless, but he has a stripe down his back. So usually the super Arctics will have a stripe. And you can see how it's like really dark, and then his background is really light. He's actually a pinkish color in person.
Okay.
This is one of the coolest hognose morphs right here. And so he has both of the codom genes expressed in their super form. So super Arctic as well as super Anaconda.
Oh, nice. Nice. So how long did it take you to produce him?
So he actually came out of my first ever clutch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the mother was an Arctic Anaconda. So one copy of both of those codominant genes.
Okay.
And the father was a super Arctic Anaconda. So I had a pretty good chances of producing him.
Yeah.
He was like the third one to hatch out of the egg, and I couldn't believe it, man.
Nice.
Definitely one of my favorites.
Nice.
So in terms of which is my favorite out of those two, I'll probably say the Arctic gene because it's just so unique. Now, in terms of the recessive genes, my favorite recessive gene by far is the sable gene. So the sable is a melanistic gene. It's a darker hognose, but it acts as an enhancer. So anything you combine the sable gene, it just makes it better. So like when you combine the sable gene with another recessive, the albino, you get a hognose snake called a sunburst. And so this is like a vividly bright orange hognose snake with like with these dark red eyes. Like it looks you have to see it, like it's crazy.
Yeah.
Also they have a relatively new morph combination with the sable and exanthic. It's called a storm cloud, and these snakes hatch out a blue hog.
Really Oh wow.
So yeah, definitely the sable gene, in my opinion, is the best recessive gene because it enhances anything that you mix it with, whether it's the anaconda, the Arctic, or any other recessive. It just makes it better compared to other recessive genes.
Nice.
And to answer Celtic reptiles, what morphs do I work with? I actually don't have any exanthics in my collection. So I have like the Arctic and I have anaconda, Arctic. I'm really trying to specialize in yellow hognose snakes. So I have a lime bred gene called Lemon Ghost. So I can pull that out. That's my favorite morph. It's very rare. The guy that founded the Arctic gene, Jeff Gelwood, he actually been working on this this line of hognose to make them yellow and yellow for almost 20 years.
Okay.
So I'll work with that. I have the leucistic gene. I have a female that carries the leucistic gene, and I have a male that is a 50% chance. So next year I have a possibility of making an all-white hog nose.
I was just about to ask you that, like, with the recessive. So you have like 50% and like 66%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's pretty much just like ball pythons. Yep. Works the same way.
It's all the same way.
Okay.
What else do I have? I'm looking at them. I have like normals. Also have two Eastern hog noses. So I have an orange face Eastern, which is crazy. Everybody likes that. And I have a melanistic Eastern hog nose. So it's jet black. And the Eastern hog noses are cool because they go through a color change. So my melanistic one, he was like gray and had pattern when he was a baby. Now he's completely jet black.
Okay. Wow. El Herb Reptiles, thanks for coming through. So, like, you said there's only really two codons for hog noses. Okay. So there's still people, because you said there also is a new recessive that people are starting to work with that's kind of just coming out. So there's still morphs being found.
And it's morphs coming out all the time, man. And the thing about it is, there's not a lot of people that have wild caught hog nose snakes. Most of everything, like, it's only a few people that actually get them from the wild, because a lot of laws in the United States, you can't do it, or you have to have permits. So it's not like ball pythons where they're bringing in thousands of wild caught animals every year. So you have a whole bunch of morphs that do pop up on a regular basis, but it's probably a lot in the wild that we just don't know of, because not a lot of people are getting wild caught animals to kind of bring in new bloodlines.
Gotcha. So the potential for the hog nose morphs to expand is still there.
Oh yeah.
Like, you guys are still kind of in your infancy, really. Yeah. Oh wow. Okay.
And they hold their value. Like, they're not cheap, man. not cheap.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was looking at the morph market. I was like, oh wow. So I'm gonna have to go do some overtime to pick up a pair to try to get into this breeding. Okay, so I need to take my time before I go get something. Let me know I can take care of them first, know how to do everything. So we were speaking of that. Is it brumation?
Yeah.
Yes. So speak on like brumation, how that works, a little bit about that. And after that, we'll go to the next question, because I'm learning. So I'm loving this.
So these snakes are a North American species. So we do go through a winter period. And so they actually range from South Texas all the way to Canada. So the ones up there, it gets really cold. So they actually hibernate. So brumation is just another term for hibernation. And so we try to mimic what they do in the wild in captivity, kind of like with corn snakes. So usually you'll see most breeders will start bringing their snakes down to around 50 to 55 degrees, usually like in October or November. And you can keep them in brumation for like 2 to 3 months. And then after that, you slowly want to bring their temperature up. I usually, for a week, I'll take them out of I use a wine cooler.
Okay.
Down. And then once after the 3 months is over, I'll take them out and I'll just put them at room temperature for a week. And, after that, I'll slowly bring them up and start bringing up like the heat. So I only keep the warm spot at 85 degrees for my snakes.
Oh, really? Okay.
But brumation, it helps with the fertility of your animals. It gets the females and get them ready to breed. Once you take them out of brumation, they're ready to breed. Like, it just, I don't know, kicks off an instinct for them. I think it makes the males more fertile. But yeah, it's pretty cool. You go 2 or 3 months without having to feed your snakes. It kind of cuts down on the food bill.
Yes, that definitely cuts down. Oh, wow. Hey, James, thanks for coming through. So apparently I won a snake over at Keys Constrictors. They're doing they hit 1,000 subscribers. They're doing a huge giveaway right now. They're doing it on their Hair Down Fridays. So apparently I want a snake, so I'm definitely going to find out about that and what I won later on. But if you are not watching them, you're over here watching us, appreciate it. But definitely go check them out after our video, after our live, because I'm probably going to jump over there to go hang out with them for a little bit as well. But yes, I won a snake apparently. But yeah, so the brumation lasts 2 to 3 months, and usually when they come out, they're ready to breed. That is interesting. So there's
it
a good
takes the guesswork out of breeding, because you can see
it does. Because
like with ball pythons, I'm not really sure how. I don't really know about breeding ball pythons, but I'm like, how do y'all know when to pair the male and the female? Like,
so
some people kind of they use the X-rays or ultrasounds to check follicles.
Yeah. So usually you start pairing in like November. Some people breed year round. I usually start pairing in November after a girl's got a decent amount of weight. She'll give you signs that she's ready to start breeding. Like, she'll be on the cold side of the tub a lot more. She'll bull wrap. So you'll throw a male in there, see if he locks. If he locks, you'll check her follicles within like a month, see if they're starting to grow. And if they're growing, you throw them in there again one more time. And then just monitor. If you don't have an ultrasound, you palpate and see how big the follicles are. But it is a lot of guessing. It's a lot of guessing, kind of knowing your animals and taking the time to know your animals and let them show you the signs that they're ready to breed. So it's very interesting. With the brumation, you can just put them in there and bring them back out. That is takes a lot of the guesswork out. Yeah.
And they have different amazing behaviors. Like whenever you introduce a male to the female, like they'll make a twitching motion, I guess, to communicate with each other. And that's how you know that, you know what I'm saying, that they could be compatible. One thing with hognose snakes is they can be cannibalistic. So there are instances where the female will eat the male. So you do have to kind of watch out for that. It is kind of rare, but that is, that can happen. I actually know a breeder. I was talking to him at a reptile expo. He had a leucistic male. So this, he paid $7,500 for this male. And this year he paired it with, a female that was het leucistic, and she ate him. So he lost a $7,500 animal.
I was
did they at least lock up? He said he didn't even know. I'm like,
I was just about to ask you that. Prophecy Exotics, thanks for coming through. So let me know, did I win a swag pack or did I win a snake? Let me know in the comments if you guys are still here. James, let me know. Yes, I hear that sometimes the females can eat the males, but there's usually too. So there's usually, I was told you usually, when you first put them together, you look for certain signs that the female is okay with breeding with that male.
Yeah, it's the twitching motion.
The twitching, okay. So how often, Jesus, how often does that actually happen? Is it just because the female is bigger than the male sometimes, or is it just a combination of things? Man,
some females, I've never had it happen to me. None of my females have been interested in eating their mates.
Okay.
I don't know. Some females are just more food hungry. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's just you just have those special ones that'll eat anything.
Understandable. That's just crazy. Oh, wow.
Even if you feed them, make sure that they're nice and full.
Yeah.
That's what I try to do. Like, I'll put my male in there, and the only time I'll take them out is for feeding. And then, but I make sure my female is nice and fed before I put the male back in there. But sometimes it doesn't matter. These females, when they're going through the process of building eggs and ovulating eggs, they'll eat every day if you fed them.
Oh, okay.
Appetites is just like ravenous.
Gotcha. They need to build that fat to be able to drop those eggs.
Makes sense.
So I forgot I was supposed to be asking you questions. I'm super fascinated.
Yeah, like a regular conversation.
I mean, sometimes that happens with this. I forget about the questions and start talking to the person. We start getting to a tangent and we go down a rabbit hole about information on something that's stuff they know and I want to learn, which is also still good because sometimes these are questions other people have too. But every so often, I got to reel myself back and get back to the question. So let's hit another question. what camera do you use to make your YouTube videos?
All right, so I actually just use my phone. This is a Google Pixel 5a.
Okay.
I just shoot it at 1080p, 30 frames per second. Before that, I was using a Google Pixel 2. But the key to like having good quality is your lighting. Like, I don't care how good your camera is. If your lighting is off, it's not going to look good. So I try to shoot in natural light as much as possible. I try to zoom in really good as well. And it gives me really good footage. And then like when I go into editing the videos, I can do the white balance to kind of give it more of an accurate like color of the video. I just use my phone for my videos. It's real easy. I like the zoom in feature. Like, I've tried using cameras before, but I can never like get it focused on the snake. But with my camera, I just press on the screen and it auto focuses like that.
I can understand that. Like, we have very good cameras on our phones, video cameras too. I get why people sometimes buy a video camera for just shooting. I understand that. But when it's right there in your pocket, why not use it you always have it. It's always near you. Understandable. But I never thought about shooting in natural light. I mean,
it's a night and day difference, man. Even taking pictures, like you'll get more of an accurate color of your animals.
Okay. I might have to try to do that when I take pictures. Unfortunately, I'm in my basement. My snake room is in my basement. Yeah. So I don't have a lot of windows down here for the natural light. But maybe I'll start taking snakes out in my backyard and take pictures.
Yeah, especially if I want to freak out the neighbors. Instagram or something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Even if you shoot it by a window and you have some natural light coming through a window.
Yep. Yeah, I might have to do that. I could take it to my son's room. He's got two windows, so I could put it in the center and have that natural light coming from both angles. So that'd be good too. But lighting is important. I've been trying to learn how to better light my videos and the best way to set up your lights, because you want it a certain distance away from you, but not too far where it creates a shadow, but not too close where it makes you super bright and drowns you out. Yeah. So it is a skill that you have to learn and develop. But that's something I also learn as I'm getting older. There's nothing wrong with learning something new.
Oh, yeah, I'm always learning.
Yeah, so like, is that the same thing for hog noses? Do you usually just leave them be after they eat?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay, so yeah. See, that's all around. No animal wants to be messed with after they eat. Let them chill.
Yeah, you don't want them to regurgitate, and that's a whole other issue.
Yes, I definitely worry about. That wasn't even a ball python. So I had an emerald tree boa when I first started getting into reptiles, and she regurgitated one time. And once they start to regurgitate, it becomes almost always the same occurrence. They do it every time. So it took me 2 months to get her to stop regurgitating and keep the meal down. Not fun to walk into the snake room and smell a decaying rat. Not fun at all. You have any dream combinations? So that is gonna be one of our last questions. So we'll definitely, I'm a star of that. So we'll talk about that later on. We got a couple more questions. Definitely, he's excited. He's like, yeah, I got, because you already hit one of your dream snakes on your first clutch.
Oh yeah,
which is crazy. But let's ask this question. So now I know I'm interested if you do breed, but here we go. Do you breed or do you just buy your snake food?
I buy my snake food. There's no way I'm about to have mice in my house. Those things poop and pee all day long, man.
Understandable.
I couldn't imagine breeding mice. And I know rats, it's a pretty lucrative business if you can get the whole thing going. But it's like, I feel like you can't even take a vacation or something. Like, what if you want to take a trip? Like, who's going to watch the mice? You always have to buy food. You always have to buy the bedding, change the bedding. Hopefully they don't get out. You got to buy the equipment, the expensive racks, freedom breeders or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just like, And then what if you can't find anybody that's going to buy your animals? Like, what if you can't find any ball python breeders to buy you?
So you're not going to work. You're not going to have any issues selling the rats. Trust me. Right now, it's kind of a...
They're in demand.
It's super in demand because a lot of people got out of breeding over the pandemic because prices went up on stuff, so they couldn't buy feed and stuff like that. So they just shut down their whole operations. So that left wide vacancies for people. Like, I'm looking for a consistent rat breeder right now, trying to have one. Unfortunately, I might have to start breeding my own rats, which is... You only really need to clean them once, maybe twice a week when you get a decent rotation.
And I heard mice are worse. I heard
mice are definitely worse. They stink so bad. They're so bad. Like, I'll breed rats. You can keep them fairly clean. In a week, you would have to clean their tubs, but you can keep the smell down. Mice, there's no way to keep that smell down. They are just... bad.
I've watched a YouTube video before saying, like, with the mice, like, just the ammonia levels can ruin your air conditioning system. Like, you got to be like an HVAC technician to maintain everything. I was like, man, I'm just going to pay the money.
Yeah. I mean, I would rather pay than breed, but it is coming not cost effective to just buy rats. I might have to start breeding just to bring the cost of feeding my collection down. And then the knowing what your rats are eating, that you're feeding your snakes is also really great to always have them on demand because you're breeding them, you have them right there, especially rat pups, having them for hatchlings, live ones, just so you get them started eating before you get them on frozen thaw. It definitely helps there. But yeah, for hognose, you would have to have mice, you would have to breed mice. I don't recommend breeding mice. I don't. So I can understand buying mice because they're still inexpensive. Yeah. And for hognose, it's a lot more humane to feed frozen thaw than live. So I can definitely understand you buying them. And like you said, you don't want to deal with the smell. I can understand it with that. What's up, Wolf? Thanks for coming through. So I wasn't really sure what the first regurgitation was, the reason was for that. The Emerald Tree Boa I did have. Unfortunately, she passed away a year after I got her from stop regurgitating. She passed away. But the second time she regurgitated, I think it was my heat was off a little bit. And Emerald Tree Boas are you have to be on point with their husbandry. Any little thing can throw them out of whack. They're a very sensitive animal. So that's what the second one was. So once I got that corrected, she was okay. But then she passed away and I'm not even sure what happened to her, but I had her for 5 years. She was my dream snake to have. Always wanted an Emerald Tree Boa. So I got her, had her from her being a baby to her color phase. She went from orange to yellow to green. And like, I loved having that animal. And it hurt when like she passed. It really made me sad. But I did enjoy the time I had her. And she let me hold her. She was able to be handled. I didn't handle her too much, but I was able to take her out the cage and everything. Being they're the biggest non-venom fang animals. She did bite me one time, but that one, she was real little. But I love that animal. I probably will get another Emerald Tree Boa down the road, but as of right now, I'm going to stick with ball pythons and slowly move into hog noses as I learn more about them. Yes, breeding does suck, but like Christopher said, sometimes that's how you can afford to take care of your collection. Gotta take the good with the bad. I think
it depends on what type of snakes that you have. Like larger snake, like ball pythons can't really feed on mice, especially like an adult female. So
true. If you're feeding multiple mice a week, and ball pythons are, what is it? They're opportunist eaters. So they eat when they can. So when you get them to feeding every day like that, it kind of messes them up a little bit sometimes, so they're not used to that. What up, MTip Reptiles? Thanks for coming through. So let's hit another question, which is actually, one more question before the last question. So this is not the last, it's the second to the last question. What do you use to edit your videos?
All right, so I have a MacBook Air.
Okay.
And so I started off using iMovie to edit all my videos. I think that's the easiest editing software. It's the most user-friendly. I love iMovie. It's just certain features that it doesn't have, like, especially if you want to have like subtitles to your videos, or you want to put like multiple clips on top of each other. So
yeah,
actually, like about a month ago, I recently upgraded to Final Cut Pro on my Mac. I'm still learning how to do it. It's definitely not as user-friendly as the iMovie. I haven't really made much improvements to my videos. I'm still, like I said, I'm still in the learning process, but sometimes I'm like, I get so frustrated that I go back on iMovie. So it's either one of those two, but iMovie, that's where I got started. If you have a Mac and you want to start making videos, then iMovie is all you need. You can even probably do it if you have an iPhone, on your iPhone, edit videos that way.
Yeah, I think they have editor on the iPhone as well. Yeah. I mean, there are so many different free editors you can find, but even if you want to go pay for editor, they have ones that definitely are work with you and teach you how to do it. I mean, mostly editing, you just need to be able to cut stuff, add music, sometimes put words in there. Like, especially in the beginning, if you're just starting out, you don't need to go buy it.
Yeah, don't do editor. Crazy. Yeah.
You don't need to do that.
It's because I couldn't imagine just not knowing how to edit and going straight into like Adobe Premiere. You're not going to know what you're doing. You're going to be spending most of your time watching YouTube videos on how to do stuff.
That's
why I love iMovie, because it's so user friendly. And once you learn how to use that, it makes it easier to go to more advanced editing software.
Okay. So it's like the beginner editor, and it helps you learn what you need to do. So when you want to advance and get better, that is a great way to think about it. I never thought about it that way. Okay. Creative Genetics, what's up? Thanks for coming through. Yes, I'm starting to see the benefits of hog noses. Mice are very much cheaper than rats.
Oh, man, way cheaper.
So that's a benefit hog nose have right there for me. So it's starting to look even more like I might start dabbling into hog noses. Definitely. Raising rats is hard times. 7 days away hospital, I find people take care of them is hard. Last 30. Yeah. I mean, when you're breeding your own, you definitely have to set up to where you either have somebody to come over and help if you need to go, because you can't leave them more than a week.
Yeah.
Realistically, more than a week. If you got a watering system, more than a week, you need to go check on them.
And good luck finding somebody that's not scared of them.
Yeah, that is also, that's one thing I had to worry about with the snakes. Because I thought if I ever have to go on like a vacation or go out of town for more than a week or two, I'm gonna need to have somebody come over and check on them, just to change waters and make sure if they poop. So I was thinking about that too. You usually can let them go for a week. As long as you change their water right before, they'll be good for a week. But after that, you're pushing it, you need to go check on them. That's one of the reasons why I stuck with snakes, because they are easy to take care of.
Oh, yes. Snakes are so easy to take care of.
Man. So easy. I feel for the guys that have like monitors, because those are a daily thing. Those are daily. They're beautiful and I admire them, but I don't know if I could do that daily upkeep for them, especially trying to breed them upkeep. They're beautiful, though. I won't take that away. They're beautiful, but that daily. Nah, I don't know if I can do it. Dia Reptilia, thanks for coming through. Appreciate you. Primus Scales, what's up, Ken? Thanks for coming through. I feel you. Yeah, six breeder rats. Oh, dang. Sorry to hear that. Clover's Reptiles, what's up? Thanks for coming through.
How you doing, Clover's Reptiles, man? He's another hog-nosed breeder.
I got him on. I've been talking to him about YouTube. So he started his YouTube channel. Yeah. I'm going to have him on. I do a series called Next Up where I bring someone that just started their channel, do a quick little interview with them, and try to get people to go over to their channel, subscribe, get to check them out. He's going to be a guest on episode in October, I believe.
Yeah, he got super his whole excited. Family involved too, which is
yes. Yes, love it. Love it. Definitely excited. Definitely excited to talk to him. Let's see, Christopher. One's been royal and a few females in the new colonies had births. Okay. That yeah, it's hard to keep them alive sometimes. Rodents, they tend to be cannibals at times that eat their young, eat their babies. So you guys don't even have to worry about like African songbirds at all for like feeding your hog nose, huh? You hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. So have you ever used African soft furs?
No, I've heard of people using them for hog nose. Okay. I don't think there's anything wrong. They're probably more expensive than actually regular mice, but yeah. I have heard like some big breeders actually said it's okay to use African soft furs for hog nose.
Okay. But that's never something you guys have to even worry about, because usually you get like we were talking about, you said like so there's northern hog nose and then there's eastern hog noses, right?
There's western and eastern.
Western,
so the western, the actual name is, I guess the more official name is plains hog nose. But okay. Most people know them as westerns, and then you have your easterns. You also have Mexican hog noses, you have southern hog noses, you have hog nose snakes all over the world. You even have some like in South America, the tricolors. You have the Madagascar hog nose, but in North America is the Mexican, the Southern, the Eastern, and the Plains.
Okay. I didn't know there was that many. Jesus.
Yeah, but most people have the Plains hog nose snake.
Gotcha.
Very few people have the Easterns. I have a pair that I'll be breeding next year, but because they're so hard to get them to eat mice, a lot of people don't really have them. And then you do have a few states where you can't have them in captivity because they're native species.
Oh, I didn't even think about looking to see if I can have them in Wisconsin.
Yeah, you can have them in Wisconsin.
Okay.
In terms of like your plains hognose snakes, you can't have them in Colorado. You can't have them in Iowa. And if you live in Illinois, you have to have a permit. You can have them in Illinois with a permit, but I don't think you can breed them. I think you can just have them, which is
silly. Yeah, that's weird.
Is what it is.
Are they worried about it them becoming too big of a population out there? Like,
I think it's because of the native population. They don't want people bringing them in from the wild and stuff. But I don't see what's the issue with having a captive bred hog nose that's a color morph that's probably not even going to survive in the wild.
True.
You know, the lawmakers, they don't know anything about reptiles.
Very true. They just be doing stuff to do it. Thanks for coming through, Thomas. What's up? Snakes are low maintenance, under 20. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Looking forward to being on Next Up. Appreciate you. Appreciate you. Who said that? Okay. Just trying to keep up with all the chats. Okay, I think I got all the chats. So before we go, I have only one more question. I honestly have a lot more questions, but I'm not going to bore you guys with all the questions I have. I'm just going to talk to him alone and get these questions answered. But here's my last question. If you guys have any questions, definitely put them in the chat. We'll definitely get to them. But what is your dream morph to make?
I would probably say my dream morph to make would be like it's called an Arctic Sunburst. So it's a combination of the sable gene, the albino gene, and the Arctic gene. I had a Sunburst female. Her name was Cheeto. She was bright orange, and she passed away last October from heart disease. That killed me. Also, I have a clutch, 16 eggs in the incubator right now. My favorite morph is the Lemon Ghost Woma. So it's like a bright yellow hognose snake. And I have another snake called a granite jungle, created by a guy named Kevin Rose. And this is another really yellow snake. And so I bred these two together and I have 16 eggs. And this pairing has only been done once. So, and the guy that that was the first to breed it, he actually just hatched out his clutch maybe a week ago, and his animals look crazy. Like, and so I'm like, they should hatch out the first week of August. I think August 8th or August 9th. Like, I'm probably not gonna be able to go to sleep peeking on those eggs. I'm gonna
understand.
And then also, I have a pair. So this is for the hognose people. You may not know the genetics. I have a pair of Arctic Anaconda, and their het Mai Tai. So a Mai Tai is a visual sable toffee belly. So sable and toffee are two recessive genes.
Okay.
And they're 50% het lavender. So they'll be ready not next year, but the next year. So I have a possibility of making a super Arctic, super conda, like the one I showed you.
Yeah.
But combined with the sable and toffee gene, which will make a purple hog nose.
Oh, okay.
So that's so something I'm looking forward to.
That'd be, for genetics, it'd be like a super codon and
two super codons.
Two super codons.
And a double recessive.
And a double
and then recessive. They're both 50% het lavender. So if they prove out to be lavender, a triple be a recessive triple. Too.
Yeah. Okay.
So I may not even know what I hatch out.
Okay. Oh wow. Oh wow. So you just talked about watching eggs. How long do hognose eggs incubate? And what temperature do you incubate them at?
So I incubate at 81 degrees, and my setup, my eggs have been hatching out at 52 days.
Okay.
Well, I only hatched out two clutches, but 52 days. So I have a clutch that's actually expected to hatch out on Sunday. So, but yeah, 52 days for me, it depends on the temperature range. The recommended range is usually in between like 80 to 82 is usually the sweet spot. So I just went in the middle of that and do 81 to be safe.
Gotcha. So are hognose like, I think it's geckos where you can change the temperature and you can get male
sex.
Yeah.
You know what? That's a good question, man. I talked to a breeder that thinks that you can. So what's crazy is I've been producing a lot of females. So last year I only produced 5 hog noses that survived. Okay. And 4 of them were females. So 4 out of the 5 were females. My first clutch that hatched this year was 6 hog noses, and 5 of them were females. So I've heard that if you incubate at a lower temperature, you may produce more females. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Okay.
But it could, I don't know, it could be. It could be. Yeah. Like temperatures could affect like the gender of your animals.
Okay. But I'm not sure. Okay. Sashmo asked, how long does it typically take you to sell your hog nose? Because he's getting into breeding slowly, though.
My hog noses, they sold pretty fast, but I have a YouTube, like.
Yeah.
But I think YouTube played a big part. But it also depends on what morphs you have. I think, like, if you want to produce snakes, hog noses that sell really quick, I would say the snows, so the visual, exantic, albinos, like the white, they're like pinkish and white. Those sell like that. Like, I know people that breed those just so they can sell them and put that money to buy what they really want. Lavenders are a really popular morph as well, especially if they're het albino. A lavender albino is called a coral. They're kind of like a pinkish hog nose. Those are really popular right now. So yeah, lavenders, the snows, super arctics, and then you have some people that specialize in the higher end stuff. So even if you're a new hognose breeder, if you have a morph combination that not that many people have, you can probably sell it pretty quick. Gotcha. Even if it's like $2,000 to $3,000, if it's something that people want, like, people will spend that money.
Very true.
But yeah, but like with me, I have the potential to make high-end stuff, but I also have the potential to make low-end stuff. Like, like this clutch that I'm about to hatch, I'm gonna have some normals, just some Arctics, because I do have people that want to buy hog noses for their kids and they don't want to spend that much money. So exactly. I'm gonna look out for them as well. It's not about, I'm not just in the business to make the most high end stuff. I want to be able to go to a reptile expo whenever I start vending and be able to sell to the average person.
Gotcha. So you go from different levels in the market.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing to do, because you don't want to just produce a bunch of leucistic hog noses and have $6,000 animals, a whole clutch of them, and it's like,
yeah,
are you really sure? Are you confident that you can sell all of them? Now, some people can. The more
some people,
larger breeders that have their name out, have a reputation, they can sell them, but I don't think that's the best route to go. If you're going to produce an expensive animal, I think it should be expensive because it has a lot of different recessive genes in it.
Something visual, people are like, yeah, I need to add that to my collection. Yeah,
so they can use that to make heads.
Yeah.
Like, the more genes you have, the better. So, but that's why I'm like, the leucistic, I wouldn't recommend like a beginner to invest in a leucistic gene, because it's just one recessive and it's not, you can't really do anything to it. So it's cool to make them, but you don't want to just go crazy and produce a whole bunch of them and then not be able to sell them. So.
Gotcha. What would be your max on how many hog noses you will have?
Right now I have like 15, not including the babies. I don't want to get like crazy with it. Like, I want to maybe like 30 would be my max adults. I probably want to breed like maybe 4 females a year. I'm not trying to do this, make this a full-time thing, because I wanted to keep this like as a hobby. I don't want this to be so overwhelmed where I feel like it's a business and then you kind of lose your passion. So I kind of want to keep it to where it's not overwhelming. So
gotcha.
If I can just breed maybe in the future 4 or 5 females a year, I think that'll be fine.
Okay. Oh, speaking of which, you said sometimes hog nose double clutch.
Yeah.
So how does that happen? Do you guys know why that happens?
So I don't think it happens that often in the wild. So whenever your hog nose lays its first clutch of eggs, she will immediately ovulate for the most part, especially if you're feeding her. So if you're after she lays her eggs, if you start feeding her like every 4 days after that and she's getting a lot of nutrients, she'll probably double clutch. And then you have some people that once she lays eggs, they'll add a male into there because she's going to ovulate. And then, but yeah, I don't think it happens that often in the wild, because they don't get as much food in the wild as we give them. But yeah, if your female lays eggs and you start feeding them every 4 days after that, it's a good chance they're going to double clutch.
Okay.
Some of them even triple clutches on rare occasions.
Oh, wow. Yes, you're late, Jeremy, but it's okay. Still glad you came. Thanks for coming, buddy. Jeremy, did I win? I was told I won a snake on Keys Things. I'm going to go check it anyway, but let me know in the comments if I did. But right here, you see where I just seen it. Dang it, I lost it. Creative Genetics said, hit that like button. Of course, guys, go ahead and hit that like button, because apparently YouTube likes it when you guys hit the like button.
Yeah.
And I like that YouTube likes it. So if you could, go hit that like button for me. Greatly appreciate that. I'm trying to see if we have any more questions, because I'm trying to not ask you more questions because I have so many questions. I've learned so much. But I don't see anybody else with any questions in there. You won something. I did win something. Okay, thank you. Is there anything you want to promote, let people know about? You said you have that clutch coming. That's a video I'm sure you're gonna be making, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when can people expect that video to come out?
Whenever they hatch out, probably Sunday. I just started a Patreon channel, so they're going to be the first ones to see the clutch. But then, so probably Tuesday, I'll put it on YouTube. I'll show the clutch and I'll sex them on camera as well. And I'm probably not going to make too many feeding videos of the babies, because I don't really, I think last year I was struggling to get a few of them to eat. And I think because the stress of kind of moving the enclosures, taking them outside to film, I'm like, you know what? I just want to get them to eat. I want them not to be as stressed out at all. So, yeah, that'll be this week. My YouTube channel is Shovel Nose Hogs. I put out like 2 or 3 videos a week. I have videos on every topic of hognose snakes. Whether you want to know the morphs, I got each morph, whether it's a sable, albino, I have videos on each morph as well as the morph combinations. So if you want to see what those animals look like, what their names are, who produced them first, I have videos on that. I have interviews with the top hognose breeders, John Rice, Mitch Davey from Fathom Hogs, Jeff Gelwood. I'm about to interview Kevin Rhodes, who was there from the beginning. I got more interviews coming. I'll be at the Daytona Reptile Expo this year, interviewing all the top hognose breeders. I make videos on the bad stuff. So I've lost thousands of dollars in this hobby dealing with snakes. I had cryptosporidium outbreak in some of my animals, brought some sick animals. So got videos on how to properly sterilize your enclosures, what to do to test your animals, and like I have videos on everything.
Okay. Yeah, definitely check out his YouTube channel. Links are in the description down below. Make sure you go hit that subscribe button. You're close to, are you at 4,000 or are you close
to? I'm like 3,500.
Okay. So definitely go hit that button, help him get to 4,000. Help keep growing his channel. He greatly appreciate it, and I know I appreciate it. How do you decide there's going to be enough for the male and female together? Do you wait for a visual lock?
Yeah, I wait for a visual lock if I can see it. Once I have a visual lock and they unlock, I take the male out. Some people will continue to pair the male with the female, but I don't want to increase the chance of my female eating my male. And if they got a good lock, he's passed his sperm on, and so I just take him out and just focus on feeding my female after I see that first lock.
Definitely. What's up, CJ? Yes, I did hit 1,000 followers on TikTok. I didn't even realize it at first. I just happened to look at it. And I guess I can go live on TikTok now. So I'm going to try to do that a little more often. Go on there and do little stuff. That's me trying to branch out in different platforms, because you never know where people might find you. So
man, even TikTok is weird. Man, my TikTok channel, like I have hognose videos, but I was just making videos like me going hiking and finding animals. And I got one video where I was just out walking and I found a box turtle and I just picked it up and just showing it to the camera. And that video went viral. It got like 5 million views in a week. And I got like 10,000 subscribers from that.
Like, oh, wow.
Like what? I'm like, I didn't even do anything.
It is so weird how you can blow up on TikTok. It's so just organic. Weirdly, people just find you out of nowhere. I'm still trying to figure out how it works sometimes, because I don't know. I get stitching. I understand how that worked, but then you try to find out where this first original video came from that people be talking about 60 days later. You're like, how did this happen? Yeah. It's a whole different community. It takes a minute to learn. Hey, I appreciate that so much. I appreciate it if you could do that. Hey, any little bit helps. Thank you. Like, that's also another thing. If you guys aren't subscribed to each other's in the chat, everybody's blue, so you can click on anybody's name and find their YouTube channel and go subscribe right now. That's how we help each other grow. That's what the community is for, helping each other grow. If we help each other grow, we all can grow together, get bigger. And that's nothing but positive right there. Two of my videos hit a million. Jeez. See, you can just do crazy stuff like that. It's ridiculous. And I see people are starting to actually be able to monetize their TikTok following too. So that's also great too, if you can get to that point. I mean, we got to feed these animals somehow. So every little money that comes in definitely helps. Definitely helps. So that's all my questions. I'm not seeing any more questions in here. I'm entitled All Shapes, brother. Yep. What does he say? Yeah. Oh, Warfels Morph. I think you're at. He did, Are you close to 900? Because I know you did. You should be close to 800. So if you're not following Warfare's Morphs, go follow Jeremy. Hit that subscribe button. Help him hit that goal, trying to hit that 800. And I know he's trying to get a 900. And he's definitely trying to hit that 1K. Because that's how you got to get 1K to be able to monetize the YouTube channel. So he's definitely trying to do that. So definitely go hit that. He's a little over 800 right now. So definitely help him get to 900. Greatly appreciate that, guys. But before we go, you know we have to go say thank you to our sponsor. And I have to click all this stuff off so I can do it. So 1 second, here we go. This episode sponsored by DW Exotics. That is my twin brother from another mother, Dre. Just go check him out. He is amazing. He is a reptile enthusiast. He has many different species of reptiles, from emerald tree boas, green tree pythons, reticulated pythons, blood pythons, ball pythons. He has, I'm going to say it wrong, it's not a Komodo dragon. It's a crocodilian. I think that's what it's called. I could be wrong, but you only find out if you go check out his YouTube channel. Yes, check out his YouTube channel. He is killing it over there. Great, great channel. Very informative. He tells you about animals. He shows you how to take care of animals. He shows you how to handle animals. He is very knowledgeable and doesn't mind giving up that knowledge and letting you know all about the animals he takes care of, he loves, and the ones we are all passionate about. Definitely go check him out. And while you're watching his YouTube, make sure you jump over to his Instagram. Go hit that follow button and check him out on TikTok too. He's on TikTok doing his thing on TikTok. But definitely go check out Dre. Dre is a great friend to me and he's a great friend to the reptile community. So definitely go check him out. Definitely go hit that follow. Let him know I sent you. And thanks again, Dre, for sponsoring this episode. Thanks again, Dre, for sponsoring this episode. Definitely go check him out. All his links are in the description down below. And yes, it is a dwarf caiman. I realized what it was after I recorded it. I let him know I did, and he was like, keep it. I love it. It's hilarious. So definitely go check him out. Thanks to everybody coming through. Greatly appreciate it. DB, thanks for coming through. We're about to leave, but thanks for coming through. is that tomorrow? Well, I don't think I have meal time tomorrow. Nope, that's not going on tomorrow. Next video for me will come out Thursday. So we have videos here every Thursday, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. And every Friday we do a live 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. So definitely check us out. If you are new to the channel, go hit that subscribe button. Greatly appreciate it. Check out my videos. See if you like them. If you do, hit the like button on a couple of them too. Appreciate that. Also, if you are not done for the night, you want something else to do, go check out Keys Constrictor's channel. They're doing Hair Down Friday. They're doing a 1,000 subscriber giveaway right now. Go hang out with them. Go tell them I sent you. Hit the subscribe button over there, the like button, all that good stuff. Tell someone you love them. Say hey to somebody. Talk to an old friend you might have not talked to. See how they're doing. Reach out. You never know when that, hey, how you doing, might do something good for people. Jermaine, thank you for coming on. Greatly appreciate it. Definitely going to be talking to you more about hog noses.
I appreciate you for letting me on your platform.
No problem. Oh, I wanted to ask you, are you going to do, I see you do interviews. Are you ever going to do lives? Do you do lives very often?
I don't really do lives because I like to edit the video and just doing interviews in the past. Usually it's something always is happening. Something wrong happens. The camera stops working or
I understand it
out, or they may say something and be like, oh, I want this to be edited out. And then I like to kind of edit the audio too. So I think it's easier for my guests. It makes them feel more comfortable when it's not live. So I usually just pre-record it and edit it.
Okay. I like to
I also like adding pictures and stuff, because when we'd be talking about different morphs, I like to edit in the pictures of what we're talking about.
Exactly. So you visually see it. Yep. That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. Well, whenever you do a live, I'm definitely willing to watch and come hang out and see it. So if you ever do, please let me know. I'm definitely going to support it 100%. But thank you guys for coming through. Greatly appreciate all the support you showed the channel. Thanks for hitting the like button, the subscribe button if you did. And thank you for checking out the video. Appreciate it so much. And hopefully I'll see you guys maybe next Thursday.